Morning, everyone. When we get a quorum, Karen, Representative Clark will move House File 3293, be recommended to pass. And Karen, would you like this to travel on its own to the House floor? Or would you like it to be in any type of omnibus bill?
Mr. Chairman, it can certainly travel ahead, since it's really a consensus bill, so I can find it.
Okay. That's what we'll do then. So go ahead and...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there is an amendment, I believe, in your packet, so if I could move that, Mr. Bill, and then House File 3293, amend it, this is the 2410 amendment.
When we get to quorum, we'll move that amendment through, but we'll work off of the lead all amendments and the 2410 amendment. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And basically, what this bill does is bring into Minnesota compliance with federal rule regarding contractors who are removing lead from child-occupied facilities and residential structures, protecting our children from childhood lead poisoning. We've done a pretty good job with that in recent years in Minnesota, but there's some tweaks that need to be done, and now that the federal government is kind of caught up with Minnesota, they have some rules that we are putting into Minnesota law. So I have one witness I'd like to have explain what we're doing with the amendment, which is, as I mentioned, a consensus document at this point. We have everybody on board, including the lead contractors, the unions, the departments that are involved, and so on. So maybe Mr. Newman could say a couple words.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Newman. I'm the Executive Director of the Sustainable Resources Center. This amendment just clarifies some of the language in the bill that we propose to ensure that we're not adding additional requirements over and above what the EPA requires in the rule that goes into effect on April 22nd. We want to make sure that we're doing this in a way that doesn't add cost to the Department of Labor and Industry for enforcement of the EPA rule. So they will be linking their site to a website maintained by the EPA so that anybody who wants to find out if their contractor is certified to work in pre-1978 properties can link back to the EPA website. The EPA issues a certification and maintains the website. The Department of Health in Minnesota has the rulemaking authority to take over the federal authority that was granted last year in the legislature. And when that happens in 18 months or approximately that period of time, then that would transition from the EPA certification to the Department of Health.
And there's no cost to Dolly on this, or that can absorb it?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so everybody's fine with this. Representative Clark, Representative McCormick.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, how many of our licensed residential contractors and remodelers currently are certified to do this kind of work?
There are, last I checked, I think there were 150 or so on the EPA website. The EPA is moving very quickly to get firms certified. And there's a number of training providers in Minnesota that are working as hard as possible to get people trained. The effective date of this bill is February 1st. In case the EPA makes a modification to the effective dates of its work, we have a chance to go back and make a correction next year if necessary. So this bill doesn't go into effect till February.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I can follow through. What would be the cost for that training and the cost for the license on that, for the addition?
I believe the federal... federal charge is $300 for a five-year license, and the training ranges from about $175 to about $250 per person. Each certified firm has to have at least one person as a supervisor on site who has received the formal training, but then they're able to train the workers on the job. They have to be there at key points along the way. Those are all requirements of the federal rule, so we're not adding anything to it here. We're trying to provide an enforcement mechanism for consumer protection and contractor protection by building this into the state building code and the contractor licensure requirements that are currently in state law. So we're not adding anything to what the EPA already requires.
Okay. No further questions? Anybody in the audience concerned about it? If not, then Representative Clark, this did come to us from finance, so we'll have to go back to finance.
That's fine.
So when we get a quorum, and it's kind of tough with a meeting date that changed date on a day that we're not meeting, because other people in the committees, in different committees, so. As soon as we get a quorum, we'll move the lead on, and we refer it then to finance.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Murdoch, we'll take you since you're here, and Representative McFarland, we'll move the bill once, then you get enough people to move.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Go ahead. We'll, like I said, and this bill too, I don't know, it's going to have to go back to finance also, because we got it through finance, we're a division, so we'll send it to finance. Okay, so go ahead, just present the bill.
Again, good morning. House File 3024 is here because it's dealing with single-wide manufacturing homes, and there's some, it's a change to the building codes, there's fees, but it's neutral, the dollar. And this has brought my attention last summer and started working on it with Senator Saxhog and Senator Scogin. And we worked with Dolly on the project. And Assistant Commissioner Jawakim is here to answer any questions. Also, Mark Brunner is here from Minnesota Manufactured Homes Association. The bill went through both the Commerce Committees without any opposition. And that's about it. It's a pretty straightforward, easy bill.
Okay, there is, there has been some issues in the past about manufactured homes, but not related to these. So what it looks like you're doing here is more of an installation or reinstallation or whatever, but all the different parties that are always fighting over this have come together on this.
Yes, Mr. Chair, realtors are happy. Dolly's happy. Of course, Mark Brunner and worked with us on this thing. They're fine with it. There's no opposition to anyone that I know of.
And the issues we've had in the past, Brunner, do you want to come up, or who wants to come up?
Yeah. I believe Jim Dabney, Representative Dabney, and Representative Mahoney had some issues about the labeling, and those have been resolved. Those have been fixed. Realtors had a little issue, and we fixed that.
But any issues we've had in the past with hookups and electrical hookups and deposits and all of that stuff, they're not involved in this bill whatsoever.
No, Mr. Chairman, Mark Brunner, Manufactured Housing Association. No, those issues are not a part of this. We did work with the statewide residents organization along with the department, and there is agreement on all aspects of the bill. No outstanding issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that partially answered my question, but I also just wanted to know what Representative Murdoch, you said this kind of came to your attention. Can you just describe maybe what happened that brought this to your attention?
Go ahead.
Thank you. And Representative, I got a phone call from Mike Conlon, who owns Hilltop Homes in New York Mills, which is right in the middle of my district. And it affects their ability to resell used single-wide homes. And we had a meeting, Anderson Homes, you've heard of Anderson Homes in Sabika, King of the Road. All the dealers were concerned about this, and we had a meeting in New York Mills with about six regional dealers, and that's what really got us going on this bill. And of course, then we met in St. Cloud, and eventually had four or five meetings in St. Paul with the commissioner's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to say I appreciate the time that you took to get everybody, all the stakeholders involved, from the people who generally own manufactured homes to the realtors to everybody, and I think it looks like you've done your homework, and that's a good thing.
Thank you.
I just can't believe all those Finns and Wadeen on Sabika and New York Mills are represented by you.
Irish and Danish.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, we're going to move this along then when we have a quorum here, we need a couple more members. And I'm going to have, as I said, it's going to have to go back through finance, so.
Okay, will this be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus? Mr. Chair?
We could do it that way, but if there's no opposition to this, it might be easier for you to just go right to the floor. You know, it doesn't look like it's a controversial bill at all, and that way it'll travel on its own. And, you know, if you want, I can put it in the omnibus bill too, I guess. It can go on its own and still be in there. So we can do it that way.
Yeah, that was our intent to put an omnibus bill.
I don't know if we'll get the omnibus bill signed, so you might want to jump out both offers. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Junkie. Representative Roommate. Welcome to the committee, Representative Roommate. I haven't had you in front of the committee before, I don't think, have I?
I try and avoid this committee. And I don't know that we have you down in Ag much either.
Actually, we have.
I think you had a vet thing at one time, yes.
Whenever you need stuff, Mr. Chair, I just write it into my bill without hearing, so.
And I would have done this for you too had you requested it, you know, but. Okay, all those opposed, aye. Okay, Representative Junkie, when we get one more member, we will move your bill, and is it your preference to just have this travel on its own? Is it?
Please don't put me in your
omnibus. Okay. Alrighty. Okay, Representative Poppy moves House File 3076, and I think it came from finance, so it has to go back.
Mr. Chair, this is a bill that was worked on. Last year, I carried the bill for man lift exemption from elevator regulations. And then Representative Hamilton said we got problems with small churches, too, on these new regs. So we sent a working group out this summer. They came back with Dolly leading the charge. And everyone agrees with this bill now. It's taken care of the man lifts, the churches, how often they're regulated, the fees that they pay. And there's no opposition. It's been through about 400 committees already, and there's been no opposition at all. And again, supported by Dolly. So it's a good fix. And I actually visited personally a bunch of man lift sites this summer. So,
Representative Brainerd, would you like to amend the bill like online? 210 and 213 to replace man with person? Or should we just let it go as it is?
I would certainly.
We can work on that. We can work on that on the House floor. Okay, Representative Poppy renews her motion that House File 3076 be recommended to pass and we refer to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative.
Members.
Representative Clark, pardon me?
Yeah,
Mr.
Chair.
Representative Clark now moves House File 3293 to delete all amendment.
Mr. Chairman? I've just been requested by Dolly to make a small amendment change that just came to me right now. It's three words, and with your permission, I would like to move that.
Okay. We better record.
We got a quorum.
Well, we have a quorum. We don't just don't have any. Well, we have done, but I think we have to record this. Go ahead.
So we can do it.
Mr. Chairman, members, on line 1.18, where it says have provided, I want to strike those words and write, be able to provide.
So, Representative Clark moves on the delete all amendment, the 810, to strike half provided.
Delete.
Excuse me, to delete half provided.
Delete half provided, and to insert be able to provide.
Be able to provide. Does everybody understand the amendment?
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Clark renews her motion that, we have to do the delete all amendment now as amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Clark then moves that House File 3293 as amended be recommended to pass and we refer to finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And
Mr. Chair?
Then we have the.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryan.
Would it be in order for me to move House File 3020?
Yes.
We already did that?
We are going to move it now, know that we have a quorum. Representative McFarland then moves that House File 3024 be recommended to pass, and
laid over for possible, well, members, I think we should move this to the full Finance Committee, and I will talk to Representative Murdoch and also include it in my omnibus bill. So Representative McFarland moves 3024 be recommended to pass and we refer to Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevail. Okay, and we have the junkie bill then that has been moved and referred, and I will take up the Rukavina bill then. Right from here, members, I have a delete all basically in the packet. It is a 20, let's see.
17, 18 here.
No, that's not it.
That's it.
No, is it? Okay. It's the 810-2417 amendment. And I would move that amendment then to House File 3533. First, I guess I better move House File 3533. We recommend it pass. And do I have to go to Finance or can I go right to the floor?
This one can go right to the floor.
And be referred to the House floor. And now I'll move the 810-2417 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Members, this bill, the situation is this. We had a collective bargaining agreements in two communities in my district, and a joint powers agreement was agreed on between the two communities. And what happened is they laid off all of the employees in the Public Works Department in the city of Gilbert, who happened to be represented by AFSCME, and absorbed them into the Public Works Department, where there are only a couple people in Dewabit. And basically, you know, the AFSCME contract disappeared, and the employees in Dewabit were represented by a different union and basically lost considerable benefits and salary, and their salaries in that agreement. So I had a bill introduced that wasn't, there were some concerns on the part of cities, counties, and school districts, and now with this amendment, I talked to the League of Minnesota Cities yesterday. They're fine with it. They implied that the counties could live with it. And so the only one now that's showing up are the school boards, who haven't seen the language until this morning. And I thought that they were also privy to this new amendment that you're seeing here. So with that, I guess, Ms. Schwab, if you'd like to come up, or Valerie, whoever wants to come up and show your support for my new amendment. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. We just want to vocalize some of our concerns on this and do believe this is something we can work out together and find the right path. Our concern comes when the last line of the amendment, when it says negotiations of the effect of the employee and the job elimination, it isn't clear to us that if you come to an impasse, or there it has to be, what is the outcome of that? Do we just have to have the talks and sit down and talk about them, or does there have to be some kind of integral plan? And for school districts that are very different from cities and counties, we have continuing contract rights, seniority, and we aren't allowed by state statute to open our contracts only every 2 years. So part of us is when this would go into effect. The other part is the outcome that would be required for districts. And we use these all the time. We use these with cities for liaison agencies. We use it with counties. We use it with in-between school districts. A lot of our, you know, physics and other science teachers are shared in communities through joint powers agreements. And it's because we're so have such comprehensive coverage for our employees that this gets a little bit more difficult.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Valerie Doslung, and I represent the Intermediate School Districts. And some of you may be familiar with the intermediate system. They are a unique school district. They are situated here in the metropolitan area. There's three of them, one in the West Metro, one in the East Metro, and one in the South Metro. And they provide individual school districts in the metropolitan area can choose to become a member of an intermediate. And they are, intermediates are governed by their joint powers agreements as stipulated in the statute. And so we have a lot of questions about kind of what this means for the nature of the work that intermediates do. And the role that intermediates play is they help provide very specialized services to their member districts for high-cost special ed students or very high-cost career and tech ed. They do a number of things, but for one example of what they do, let's say the White Bear Lake School District has a very high, severely disabled student, very high-cost student, and the school districts are required to provide the educational services to that student. It's very expensive for the White Bear School District to provide those services, so they work with the intermediate, and the intermediate is able to employ the teachers to serve the White Bear Lake student, as well as other students in other school districts that might be very high-cost special ed students. That's one of many, many things that they do. So we have a lot of questions about this, and Representative Riccadina, we are more than willing to try to work with you on this. And I believe that there is a section of statute in the intermediate statutes regarding to labor and union issues that deals specifically with if a relationship between a member district and an intermediate, and I'm working on trying to find that. The other thing I wanted to point out is that all of the employees of the intermediate district, the teachers are all governed under PELRA. School districts must do work under PELRA and collective bargaining agreements, and they must meet the January 15th deadline requirement as well. So,
okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I will, if there are concerns, I will, you know, try to work with you. I think we've changed this now. This is the second change in this. And I see Mr. Carlson and Mr. Carlson, the public employee lobbyist twins, are in the audience. And so, as I said, I've tried to meet your concerns. You understand the situation I'm trying to correct, and I don't think it probably ever arises in your case where you form a joint powers agreement to lay off a couple of speech teachers in one district to hire them under a different contract in another. And that was the case in what happened here, and that's what we're trying to address. Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, would there be a possibility that we could exclude school districts as part of the governmental units in this? I guess I'm worried about the unintended consequences for not only school districts, but service cooperatives across the state that provide a lot of these same services that the intermediate school districts have. And it's going to inhibit that sharing of services between those units to keep our costs down.
Representative McFarland, I wouldn't want to exclude school districts because, you know, they are also have collective bargaining agreements, almost all of them do, and that's what we're trying to stop from happening is similar situations that happened in this new joint powers agreement between two communities in my district, but it could happen and set a precedent everywhere, and that's what I'm trying to stop. And I don't think that the gentle ladies, as I heard them called in the Congress the other night as I watched the debate up at the table, would probably not agree with me that joint powers agreements shouldn't be used in that manner. And that's what I'm trying to address. Now, you know, I guess I could go to my House labor attorney on the committee and ask if there are concerns. You know, this language now is being pretty specific. And if you look at it, Ms. Doslinder, Ms. Schwab, and look it over here, I'm more than willing to, you know, listen to concerns as this moves along, or if I do move it on the floor, because I'm just going to move it right to the House floor. So I'd be more than happy to work with you.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland again.
Yeah,
and Reinhardt, and then Eastland.
I'd be willing to help with finding some language that would work for everybody.
I've been trying to find that, you know, and I'm more than happy to do that. I just love peace. You know, I don't like to cause any trouble. Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative McFarland, for being willing to work on this. I guess two things that I want to just comment on in the language. I understand your intent, Representative Rukavina, but you are actually speaking to a situation where the intent of the agreement was the elimination of those positions. And whether it happens secondarily or not, I think is problematic in terms of joint powers' ability to operate effectively. But also, you require negotiations as opposed to possibly referring to the grievance process or meet and confer as it's listed in the contract. So there might be some additional stipulations in addition to, that might not require negotiations to occur, but go to the contract and see what the process is that's in place to address that concern before requiring a movement to negotiations. And I think Ms. Kelleher would probably have a good handle on what those might be.
Sorry, I was calling you by your maiden name. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Meet and confer, and we do have grievance policies throughout the contract. I mean, surely school districts have very comprehensive collective bargaining units to deal with these situations. The idea that they have to be negotiated, and I think what you're looking for in your situation is the employees didn't know what was going to happen next, and that's not the case for school districts. And we're going to be heading into a rough patch, I think, going forward. We just want to make sure we understand what this would provide to us, and we are concerned that it's not clear what the outcome is of this, these negotiations, and what would happen if they were inconclusive.
And I will get to the bottom of that and tell you what my legislative intent is as we move forward. Representative Eastland.
I guess that was really my question. I was trying to get a handle on what does negotiations mean. Does it demand a certain kind of an outcome? Negotiation could mean you just sit down and talk about it and then decide that you're not going to agree on anything, and the decision just goes on. That's what I'm.
And Representative Eastland, there was another amendment in between this and the original bill that was a little weaker than this, even that the union wasn't satisfied with. So this is what we came up with, the compromise after three attempts. So thank you, gentle ladies. And will the gentleman behind care to comment at all on this, or? Are you just silent? Welcome to the committee. Oh, and we have a new person. Welcome.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Laura Kushner. I'm the Human Resources Director for the League of Minnesota Cities.
Yeah, Laura, K-U?
K-U-S-H-N-E-R.
Well, at least it's not Carlson, so welcome. go ahead.
We just wanted to testify that we have been working with Representative Rukavina and on the Senate version of this bill. While, of course, we always want to keep as many management rights as we can, we think that this is basically a clarification of existing case law, and it's probably something that we can live with. That said, of course, we haven't had months and months to digest everything that might come out of this, but we think the language is probably okay for cities and basically already exists in case law.
Thank you, Ms. Kushner. Mr. Carlson, any further comments?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the I'm representing the Minnesota Intercounty Association, but my comments would also represent those the Association of Minnesota Counties. We are fine with this language, as Ms. Kushner said. We believe this basically codifies existing case law, we are very pleased that we were able to negotiate this compromise.
Okay. Thank you so much. And for the Republicans on the committee, and historically for the Democrats, the questions I got yesterday from Representative Garofalo, when I said those laws were, so clouded for a particular reason, he's the guy that did it right there. Okay, he was Doug Johnson's former committee administrator, so that's why we have to jump all over. But Keith, it's set in good humor. I really do like you, you know. Okay, then I will move that House file. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, do I understand that you're attempting to modify 5893 with 2417, and then you're asking us to pass this, and between now and the floor, there's going to be a new recommendation?
I'm hoping that, you know, any concerns that the school board, any school board association representatives might have, maybe they can talk to Ms. Kushner and others, because if we are just codifying basically decisions that have been made in different courts because of particular situations like this, maybe this language works. But I'm more than willing, if there are concerns, to look at, you know, doing something to amend it. Again, I don't think anybody in this room thinks that it's right for a couple of local units of government to get together and basically dissolve a union and then hire everybody back under a different union contract that has less benefits and less salary without some type of negotiation happening there. And that's the situation that I'm trying to address, and I hate to see it start happening on a statewide basis if with the pressures that we have. And I understand that, you know, governments, whether they're school boards, counties, cities, or combinations of those, are looking for ways to save money. But, you know, as a good member of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, and the Labor Party being very important to me, I don't want to see things like that happen without some type of statutory language that's going to stop a particular situation like that from escalating and happening all over the state.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that very much, and I appreciate the situation that brought this to our attention. However, it seems to me from the testimony that there are still some questions, and I would want to make sure that the negotiators and the representatives of all the employee groups knew about this language. And I don't see how they can get knowledge of the new language between now and the floor.
Well,
and I realize
this will be amended onto the bill.
Too, but
this will be amended onto the bill and be, it'll be there in the new engrossment for everyone to see. And I'm not going to, I'll tell you what. We'll hold it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Okay, anything else? Representative Swales, 3386. Representative Breinert.
Can't move it.
Representative Swales, we have a problem here.
Sorry, guys.
In that we don't have the final or the latest version of the bill. Ms. Fine, do you want to grab your mic and tell us what's going on with this one?
Mr. Chair, members, the revisor's office did not put together the second engrossment of the bill as it came out of Commerce, and there were amendments there, and I can't explain that. It's unusual. So what we're handing out is the bill plus the committee report from Commerce, but technically we don't have the bill at this point because the version has not been reported out. So what we have to do is have an informational only hearing and then leave the bill in the Finance Committee, and you'll have to deal with it in the full finance committee.
Okay, and so we don't need any motions of any kind, we're just having an informational meeting.
Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swales, we don't need anyone to move your bill then, and since we technically haven't received it from finance, we don't have to re-refer it back. Welcome, nice visit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, this is my first time to your committee, I should have brought donuts or something.
We don't require that.
Oh, okay.
Just cash. Give it to my next door neighbor, Haas, he's...
I need it.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I am very pleased to be here before you today, even though this is an informational hearing. I think the more people that hear about the work that has been done, the better, because there has been extensive work done on this particular issue. It started before I even arrived 4 years ago with Representative Goodwin. She carried a bill prior to my coming that had to do with homeowner warranty issues, looking at trying to get attorney's fees to help offset the burden that many homeowners found themselves in. So I picked up that cost and started carrying it, and last year we had a package of six separate homeowner bills that went through the legislature. Only one of them was not vetoed and was signed into law. So this has been a good fight. It's been one that I've been very honored to be a part of. And part of the reason for that is I come from a community, Woodbury, that is hard hit by a lot of homes that have water intrusion issues, mold. I've been in several of those homes. I've seen the damage that has been done. I have been introduced to children who have developed chronic diseases as a result of living in a mold-infested home. So I am very honored, once again, to be very involved in this particular issue. I have sitting next to me, though, a wonderful gentleman by the name of Charlie Durenberger, who over the summer chaired a home warranty task force. And this particular task force then developed a set of standards or a process for dispute resolution so that homeowners and builders can focus on repairing the home rather than having to litigate in court. And this particular bill has been worked on repeatedly. 2 weeks ago, it began to implode, and I called together a three-hour meeting on Friday before last of all the stakeholders. And we went through the bill section by section, line by line. I had the Builders Association and their attorneys. I had homeowners and their attorneys. I had Mr. Durenberger and another member of the Home Warranty Task Force, Representative Obermueller and Representative Simon. So we sat for 3 hours going through the bill, and I can tell you that we came to compromise on every issue that was raised. And I know that it's a good bill because there's an equally amount of shared pain from everybody at that table. So at this point, Mr. Chair, just to kind of explain the process that was developed, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Durenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Durenberger. Welcome. But before you begin, I better move the minutes because we have a number of minutes as we raced forward to get our omnibus bill out that we never approved. So Representative Norris moves the March 9th, 10th, 11th, 16th, and 18th minutes.
All of them.
Yes, all at once that you've read and studied.
They were quite...
It looks in order.
They were boring.
Go ahead. All those in favor... Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. That motion prevails. Welcome, Mr. Durenberger. And you can just give us a highlight of it then, and Ollie, if they have anything to say about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. It's great to be here. I am from the Department of Labor and Industry. I'm the Enforcement Services Manager at the Construction Codes and Licensing Division. And this task force came about because when the governor vetoed the bill that would have allowed attorney's fees to be awarded to homeowners, he did direct our agency to put together a group of interested parties to explore options to litigation so homeowners and builders don't all have to lawyer up and spend months and months and tens of thousands of dollars trying to resolve these warranty disputes. And so I pulled together people that I knew from my years of experience in working on complaint investigations for the department, focusing on getting homeowners, the builders, but also recognizing that the insurers are a big piece of this, because generally when we get into these big major construction defect cases, the insurance companies are where the money comes from to make the repairs or to pay the settlements to the homeowners. And so I got this group together, started out about 25 people, and we started meeting in August and met on a monthly basis. And what we were trying to do was come up with a proposal that we could get into a bill form that everybody could live with, which was a very difficult task, because when you've got this sort of a group where you've got homeowners, and I intentionally picked homeowners that had really nightmare experiences. So these weren't, you know, just people I picked at random. They were the people that had been through the ringer, through litigation all the way to the bloody end. And the builders and their insurance companies, it was very difficult to come to areas of complete consensus. But what we did agree on, there were essentially three elements. One was a better way for builders and the homeowners to communicate with each other, where the homeowner realizes they have a problem, to put the builder on notice, and then put the builder's feet to the fire to actually acknowledge the claim of the defect, and then come out, do an inspection, and then make an offer to actually repair. Or say, I'm sorry, I'm not fixing this, it isn't my issue, but at least document all of that so both parties know exactly where they stand once the issue's been brought forward. The second issue was on providing clear building performance standards. Because right now the warranty statute refers to building standards, which are essentially the materials and installation standards of the state building code, and that's it, that's all it says. So there are a lot of issues that homeowners will have with a new home that aren't addressed in the state building code, but most homeowners think, well, you know what, my sheetrock shouldn't have all these nail pops all over it and cracks on the seams within 9 months. That's not right. But the building code doesn't address that. So we thought that would be a good idea, to develop better standards that everybody's clear on, so when the homeowner has their punch list at the end of their first year, they know and the builder knows what's covered and what isn't. That's something that's lacking in the statute right now. We didn't come to agreement on the exact standards, but we agreed to continue to meet and assign essentially a subgroup of the task force to address that specific issue, developing clear standards. And then the third component that we agreed on was an alternative dispute resolution mechanism. We felt it was important to provide homeowners and builders with some process by which they can be forced together to get the information that they each have about the home and get it in front of a neutral party to give them an idea of the relative merits of their positions before they lawyer up and file a lawsuit. And so that's the what we call the early neutral evaluation element of the proposal that does compel both parties to go through this before the homeowner can file a lawsuit. But it's designed to be quick, it's designed to be inexpensive, and not to be binding. So it's just basically we identify people who are interested and qualified to act as these neutrals to look at what the homeowner brings forward as far as what they believe is wrong with the home, the builder's response, what they think is wrong, and what they intend to do to address it, and then render a decision within 60 days and say, this is what I think. You know, basically, homeowner, you're right, this house is really in bad shape. Builder, you better do more to step up to fix it, or you're going to lose when you go to litigation. It's going to cost you a lot of money. Or, in some cases, a homeowner may have gotten excited because they found some expert that's convincing their home is killing them, and they say, wait, you know, you need to back off and think about this again. So it's just to be able to get a quick snapshot of what the relative merits of the party's positions are before they decide to lawyer up.
Okay, and the fund that we, I guess, took, God, was over there, 700 million, is that, or 700,000, is not going to have any more pressure put on it with these, with this bill at all?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're hoping that it would actually have the opposite effect, because in order for a homeowner to get money out of the contractor recovery fund, they have to sue their contractor and get a judgment against them first. And so the goal of this process would be to reduce the number of these cases that go to litigation. So if we can get the homeowner and the builder to agree on a resolution without having to go to litigation, then those people aren't going to go to the recovery fund. They won't have a need to.
They're successful. I know it's been an issue that's been around a long time that Representative Goodman worked on for many years. Okay. Well, thank you. Any questions at all?
Mr. Chair, I do want to acknowledge, if it's all right, Representative Obermeyer, because he really has been diligent on writing corrective language in the bill, and I am deeply appreciative of his hard work.
We think the world of him, too, here on this committee. Yes. Especially since we found out now that he came from a farm. I just thought he was an attorney.
It's increased his status in my eyes immensely. So,
Members, thank you, Representative Swales, and no further questions. I want to just tell you that we're going to have our omnibus policy bill up, finance policy bill up tomorrow. We will probably be putting things then on the, whose bill? Dabney's bill with the fees in it? Or Representative Morgan Mealy's bill also. We're going to have a higher ed portion and a Dolly deed portion of the omnibus bill, and I think maybe we'll send them out separately so it's easier for everyone to decipher as it goes through the process. So if anybody has any bills or anything that they want to talk about getting in the omnibus bill, amendments, whatever, give me a call.
Yeah, I have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Good, then just come and see me on the floor or whatever so we can get things to Carrie and staff, and Rita and
Kathy Novak's prepared it.
Okay.
We just have to put the bill number
that
needs to be amended on it.
Okay, good. Representative Norris, did you have a question?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Anyone else? Representative
Poppy. I just have a question. So can you go through that again? What are we doing tomorrow and where are we doing it?
Tomorrow we have our regular time, I think.
No.
Or not our regular time.
No,
oh, that's right. It's tomorrow, Wednesday. All right, 8:30 here. And we will be putting two omnibus policy bills together.
Do you have a template of what it will be from the, or is it just going to be done by amendment?
I will have some bills that we've discussed and laid over.
Right.
And then if anyone else has any amendments, you know, I kind of prefer a heads up, but you don't have to. You know how the way I'm very much in favor of freedom of speech and whatever folks want to do. So
I guess, Mr. Chair, just the question is, you wouldn't know to prepare an amendment unless you know what's going to be in the bill to begin with.
You can talk to Carrie about what two bills we'll be carrying. As I said, I believe I'll have Representative Obermiller's bill on labor and industry licensing provisions as the major vehicle for the deed Dolly portion of it. And maybe I'll use some of your bill on the...
Well, that's what I'd like to know.
Yes. But for sure, I actually haven't decided on what the higher ed portion, which vehicle I'll use. We've got you or Representative McFarland's bill that she was carrying, so we'll use one of those. So that will be up to Carrie, and I will sit down and discuss that. I'm pretty sure Representative Obermiller's bill will be the vehicle for anything dealing with Dolly or deed or any of those provisions, and I haven't decided yet whether to use Representative McFarland's or yours as a vehicle. We'll and I'll discuss that draft with either of you. So
we'll come in for drafting.
Yeah. So we'll, anybody have any questions, just talk to me on the floor on it, okay? Representative Ralphie, you have any questions on it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, you know, it'd be nice to at least have the numbers of the bills that you're thinking about including in the policy bill, or at least, or a draft. So if you can't do a draft, I'd at least like to have the numbers of the bills that are going to be included in the policy bill so that members on both sides of the aisle know what's going to be in the bill. I'm not comfortable with voting on a...
Representative Obermiller's bill is 2781, and everything on this list that could or could not be in here, we've had a hearing on.
Okay,
so
but
there'll be no surprises. We've had a hearing on it. I don't know how you pass a policy bill when there's not very much finance that the governor wants, but this is the new theory, I guess, around here, so we'll see how that works.
But, Mr. Chair, it would be easier, I think, for the committee members if we had a list of the bills that you're going to put in the policy bill, because then we wouldn't have to go back through all of the bills that we've heard, because we've heard quite a few in policy. So I'd like to have a narrowed down list of what we're looking at incorporating into the bill.
We'll get that to you as soon as we can.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, meeting adjourned.